If you are looking for even more help and guidance on your breakup, I have a few different options for you to take your healing to the next level. I have 4 different online courses depending on what stage of the breakup that you're in, from beginning all the way into moving on after heartbreak. Or you can bundle all of my courses together and use the code PODCAST to get $25 off my course bundle. I also have my 30-day no contact challenge to help hold you accountable in going no contact with your ex. And we have our free Facebook group, Healing Hearts Club, where you can connect with other people going through breakups all over the world. To learn more about any of these resources, head to the show notes where you can learn more about my courses, take the quiz to figure out which course is best for you, or join the Facebook group. And don't forget to use the code PODCAST to get $25 off my course bundle. Welcome to the Heal Your Heartbreak podcast with your host, Breakup Bestie, aka me, Kendra. Breakups are hard, but you don't have to do it alone. Each week, I will be taking you through a different topic as it relates to breaking up, healing from heartbreak, growing in your single life, dating, and getting back into happier and healthier relationships. The goal of this show is to provide support, hope, tips, and to remind you that above all, this too shall pass. Welcome back to another expert episode of the Heal Your Heartbreak podcast. Today, I have Dr. Lisa Marie Bobby, and I had mentioned this to her at the end of the interview, but I've had this podcast for over 4 years now. I've talked to so many people about breakups, and I learned so much from her and her approach to breakup recovery. So Dr. Lisa is a licensed marriage and family therapist and a couples counselor. And we talk about why she was drawn to creating this breakup recovery system after realizing that so many therapists and so much of what she learned in school did not cover someone who was going through a breakup. So we essentially, blanket statement, talk about why breakups are so hard. We talk about what's going on in our brain when we're going through a breakup, why we feel so obsessed with reaching out to an ex or connecting with them, even if we know we shouldn't. We talk about kind of the argument that our thinking brain has versus our subconscious brain. So it's a very fascinating episode. We talk about the different stages of going through a breakup, and I really love her approach. She wrote a book on this called Exaholics, which I highly recommend all of you get and read. And I just know you guys are going to get so much out of this, just like I did. Welcome, Dr. Lisa Marie Bobby, to the Heal Your Heartbreak podcast. It's an honor to have you on the show today.
I am so happy to be here, Kendra. I'm a huge fan of your work.
Thank you. Thank you. That is very flattering to hear. So I really appreciate that. I wanted to start off by, I'm always curious when it comes to therapists and mental health professionals where they end up, I guess, like seeing patients, seeing clients, and then start noticing things happening and mm-hmm. then kind of choose like a path to focus on. So I would love to hear, what were you seeing that led you to write your book about overcoming like this addictive attachment to an ex?
Honestly, so thank you for asking, but Exaholics, Breaking Your Addiction to an Ex-Love, really came, I think, from my own experience well, two pieces of this experience. I think as a therapist, I would often feel, quite frankly, kind of helpless because zero things that I learned through a master's degree and a doctorate in counseling school prepared me to be truly effective for people who were going through heartbreak, because at that time, there wasn't a ton of research or understanding around what was really going on with that underneath the surface. And so my background, I'm a marriage and family therapist. I'm also a psychologist, but I've worked with a lot of couples. And so many times relationships can be saved, but when they couldn't, I would be sitting there with one person who was heartbroken, and now it was my job to try to help them through that. Or sometimes I would have people come in that space wanting my help, and the things that I learned how to do in counseling school were just not effective. And then I was like, there has to be something else going on. I started doing a lot of research that other people had done, not in the field of psychology, actually, to find the answers. But then when I did find those answers, a lot of things fell into place. And then I was able to be much more effective with my clients. And so that's where the book came from. But to answer your question, it was from my own, like, oh no.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And people who listen to this show, it's I feel like I mention this on every episode, but similarly, I feel like how I accidentally fell into being good at this topic because early on, I'm someone who's in recovery from drug addiction, alcohol addiction. So I had quite a bit of recovery time under my belt, and I started seeing the similarities between going through a breakup and getting sober. And it wasn't until I started the podcast and started talking to people who have looked at the research and all of that, that idea became validated. But I think that's why I fell into this space and was able to kind of make that connection just based on my experience in recovery and seeing that there are so many similarities that I think more people are starting to realize.
Thanks to your work, which is wonderful. I'm so glad that you're out talking about this because without that, I think that people can often just get very isolated and it turns into this, what is uniquely wrong with me? And unfortunately, many times, I think when people connect with therapists, well-meaning therapists, but therapists who, like me, did not get any specialized training or understanding in this thing specifically, I think it's really easy for therapists to pathologize their clients and have it turn into, yeah, what is wrong with you? Let's talk about your parents' divorce, or let's talk about your attachment trauma, or like all these other things that actually have nothing to do with it. But therapists who are experiencing that level of helplessness and who are trained to diagnose and treat mental illness go looking for that. And I think that that contributes to people feeling oftentimes worse about themselves or like, oh, well, there must be something really wrong with me, my therapist said, which is really not helpful many times. So I'm so happy that you're talking about this.
That's really interesting that you say that. And when I went through my pivotal breakup that really sparked this whole thing, someone gave me the book Attached.
Oh, good one.
I remember reading it and a lot of things clicked, but I do now think that it's not the best book to read early on in your breakup because I don't know. I feel like it gives you this thing of, oh, if you had only done this, or if you had only known about your attachment style, you could have saved the relationship in a lot of ways. So I don't know. Sometimes I feel like it creates people focusing on something instead of actually addressing like actual thing that's on fire, which is yourself as you're going through the beginning of a breakup,
Which is yourself.
which is yourself, you're on fire. So I think that's interesting that sometimes that does happen where it's over pathologized in that sense, instead of just being like, hey, you went through a breakup. A breakup seems so simplistic to a lot of people instead of, I mean, and can you talk a little bit about what is going on when someone goes through a breakup, gets broken up with?
Oh, I'm happy to, but actually, can we just rewind a tiny little bit back to that Attached book? I too have read the book, I'm a big fan, and agree that we can have differences in the way that we attach to other people. And particularly, I think that book is honestly about people who are dating and understanding themselves and their tendencies. However, real attachment disorders are quite pronounced and are really tied to an oftentimes deeply traumatic early childhood history. And that does happen. But so I hear now sometimes people pathologizing themselves related to their attachment issues. And I'm like, oh, my darling, you don't even know how serious this can get. So that is one piece of it. But I think the fascinating piece that most people don't know is that literally everybody in a distressed relationship will begin to polarize into either an anxious or an avoidant presentation. So you take two perfectly secure people from the most perfectly perfect families in the history of the world. There is no such thing, by the way, but hypothetically, two perfectly secure people, and you get them together, and the relationship starts to feel rocky and hard. They will always become polarized, where one person starts withdrawing and shutting down, and the other person starts more frantically attaching until it kind of self-destructs. And so, for anybody going through a breakup or a divorce and thinking about what that experience in the relationship was like and their way of operating, they will always be able to say, oh, I was displaying these anxious attachment symptoms when, no, you were in a distressed relationship and you were having the human experience of being in one of the sides of that distressed relationship. And people don't know that.
I didn't know that.
Well, and that is actually based on the work of a very well-respected psychologist and family therapist called Dr. Susan Johnson, who sadly actually passed away just a couple of months ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. She has, I think, had cancer and she was later in life. But I mean, since the 1980s, she was the founder of a type of couples counseling called emotionally focused couples therapy, which is one of the most powerful evidence-based forms of couples counseling. And that it is exactly that, understanding distressed couples, that attachment dance that they start doing together, and all of the interventions are designed to help each person kind of come back to a more secure way of relating. Not that either person has an attachment disorder, but that we behave in those ways when we're upset or hurt or feel threatened in our relationships. So that's where that comes from. Emotionally focused couples therapy, if any of your listeners want to look into that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm grinning because it's so interesting. I always felt like my audience mm-hmm. over-indexed with anxious attachment style.
Yeah.
But that makes so much sense because,
right.
yes, when you're coming out of a breakup and you've been doing the mm-hmm. avoidant, anxious dance, that
yeah.
makes so much sense that you would come out of it really identifying with an anxious attachment style.
Completely. And the experience of a relationship lost, especially if it is against your will, is an anxious response. So I'm so glad we're talking about this
Me
because
too.
It sounds like you have maybe had a lot of listeners who have been labeling themselves based on their experiences, either in the relationship or during the breakup, that may not be fundamentally true. Like after they heal or get into a healthy relationship, they could in fact be quite secure, maybe even avoid it. It's okay.
Yeah.
But like, don't, yeah, we can't make any sweeping judgments about ourselves or our ways of operating in a distressed relationship or going through the loss of one.
Yeah, that makes so much sense.
Yeah.
Of yes, when something is taken from you mm-hmm. against your will, you're
right.
not necessarily going, I mean, maybe some people, but you're not necessarily going to be like, well, I guess,
right.
I guess we just
okay,
were meant
bye.
To be. Bye,
right.
That's it. Yeah, you're going to want to hang on, question everything that happened,
yeah.
replay the tape, try to get back together.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just, like you said, a very human experience. That is
yeah.
really, really fascinating. I'm glad we
yeah.
fell
Good.
Into that.
I'm glad that was helpful. Yeah.
So going back to mm-hmm. what I was asking about, what are some, can you share some things that happen when someone is going through a detachment, a breakup, that maybe can provide some validation as to
mm-hmm.
why it feels so hard?
Oh, of course. Well, and so there are also, and I'm sure you talk about this with your listeners, but very distinct like stages of this experience. And people have to move through these stages and phases in order to ultimately come out the other side. But I think the one that you're probably thinking of is that very first stage of around the attachment loss or the attachment rupture that's characterized by like a ton, this huge, like anxious withdrawal response that is biologically based. And so when I was doing the research for the Exaholics book, I got very interested into the work of Dr. Helen Fisher. If you've ever had a chance to speak with Dr. Helen, she is a fascinating person. And
I'm
she actually,
down.
Oh yeah, Dr. Helen Fisher.
Okay.
She's, yeah, like source material for a lot of this because she actually did a series of experiments where she put people who were going through relationship loss, so breakups, into fMRI machines in order to take scans of their brain activity. And what she found was that the regions of the brains that were all lit up and active during these times were very consistent with the same parts of the brain that are activated when people are in withdrawal from substances, and was actually able to demonstrate the physiological activity of a breakup that, again, I think it's being more discussed now, but a lot of people haven't known about this. And so, you know, we are built to bond physiologically, biologically. We are mammals first, and then we are humans. And so the parts of our brain that are all creative and planning and envisioning the future, this neocortex, is built on top of much older and frankly much more powerful brain systems that are designed to survive. Primarily, we survive, we reproduce, and we stay alive to fight another day. And it is actually on that deep mammalian brain level where attachment bonding is happening, and where when attachments are broken, there's this huge flooding response. It feels like terror. It feels like panic. It feels like I have to get reconnect with this person. It feels like a threat of death. Emotionally, it doesn't make sense logically, but that's because it's happening in a totally different area of your brain. Because when you think about, you know, 20, 30, 40,000 years ago, if our attachment bonds were severed and we were cast out into the world on our own, it actually was a death sentence. And so that is why our brains are responding to relationship loss in this way. It's a survival drive. And there's nothing rational about it. So that's why it becomes so confusing for people who are going through this. They're like, he was a psychopath. He dealt drugs. He drained my bank account. Like, all the reasons actually don't touch where this is happening. Does that make sense?
That makes so much sense. Yeah. And I think a lot of people, including myself in past breakups, cast a lot of judgment on, I feel like I'm a pretty well-adjusted person, yet I am
losing spiraling. My mind.
I'm losing my mind. Yeah, like I'm, you know, which I will fully admit, like I'm driving by someone's house to see if like there's another car in the driveway. That like, to me, if I saw that before, I would be like, that person is being cuckoo, you know, but it's this drive where all of a sudden I'm driving and I'm like, oh, I'm on a street, you know? Yeah. Or, you know, one time I did like an anonymous submission of people to submit the thing that they felt like was the most out of character thing that they did during their breakup. And it was, you know, it's very telling of things that, okay, I, you know, like went on my mom's Facebook to like stalk them kind of thing. Yeah. Like I saw when they were working and like went by, you know, it's, we do these things that feel very out of character. But if we, again, compare it to substance, we, you know, you hear about people going through addiction who do things that are nowhere near their, what they feel like their morals kind of are. So that argument of logic versus what you're actually experiencing, I think is very difficult to deal with.
Oh, yeah. But you hit it right on the head. And this withdrawal experience, I mean, like somebody coming off of opiates, heaven forbid, is what are they doing? They're obsessing, craving contact. They're imagining, you know, connecting with their substance of choice, aka this person. And really a lot of hypervigilance, but impulsive things to connect in one way or the other, either in real life or just like that information seeking. It's all part of the same thing.
So when someone is in that information seeking, that's always such a common thing that people ask, how do I stop? Mm-hmm. How do I stop doing this? Because people will say, I know finding information out will hurt me. You know, it's never going to help. I mean, it's never going to be helpful to find out how my ex is doing, what they're doing, who they're seeing. But it's this drive. What are we seeking when we do that?
Well, the myth, I mean, the limbic brain, and this is, again, the brain that lives in the darkness. It doesn't think. It is operating on a totally different operating system, okay? Mm-hmm. But the what it's trying to do is make contact to survive. And so then that kind of twists itself into pretzels and turns into a thought of, you know, getting information, is that making contact, right? So that the subconscious brain that doesn't think is getting your thinking brain to come up with excuses to drive by their house at 4 o'clock in the morning to see their there. So that's where this is coming from. But what is really happening, though, is, and this is a false narrative, but if I have contact, if I get information, then I will feel better. So going back to the addictions, and I will also just share personally, thank you for disclosing about your history and with what you've been through. I have not been addicted to like drugs necessarily, but I grew up in Roanoke, Virginia, the tobacco belt, during a time when it was quite fashionable to smoke cigarettes. And so I got hooked through the gills to cigarettes when I was like 13, 14 years old and could not quit until I was well into my 20s. Yeah, totally. And so I just wanted to share that because of like what I'm about to say, like with that addictive process. So what the way we manage this, like if you imagine somebody who is addicted to opiates, when they start to go into withdrawal, it turns into this very powerful craving that comes up with rationalizations, because if you use, then you'll feel better, right? Is the narrative. And it turns into, well, it's Tuesday and it's almost my birthday next week, so this is a reason why it would actually be okay for me to go out and use like whatever it is. Or, well, you know, I'm driving in my car and the song comes on, so maybe I should have a cigarette after all. Like all these stupid reasons, because we're having these like cravings for contact. But when you like look further away at this, like a 30,000 foot view, a opiate addict who is going through withdrawals is having these physiological symptoms that say, do the heroin, right? And if that person listens to that, they're just signing up for another trip around that rodeo. They are feeding their addiction. They are perpetuating it. But in their thinking brain, it turns into all the reasons why that's a good idea. So an observer wants to say to that opiate addicted person, don't do it. The thoughts and the feelings that you're having right now are not ones that should be listened to. You shouldn't believe everything that you think, and you shouldn't believe everything that you feel when it comes to stuff like this. And you know this from your history, and I do too, right? And so I think that the way that we need to manage these early phase withdrawal symptoms is exactly that. I am having a withdrawal symptom that is tricking me into believing that this was the love of my life and that it would make me feel better if I drove by his house and saw whether or not there was a car in his driveway. And it needs to be like, oh, right, my brain is doing that thing right now. And I need to like put the keys down and go back to bed is what I need to do right now. I can't listen to this.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Hormones are the last thing you want to be dealing with as you're going through a breakup, but they can also be hard to ignore, especially during the time of the month. This is why I love recommending Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth, which has truly become a phenomenon trusted by over 2.2 million customers, and a bottle is sold every 24 seconds. I started taking Hormone Harmony to help balance my hormones after going through 2 pregnancies in 2.5 years, and I've continued to take it because it's made such a difference in my PMS with bloating, irritation, anxiety, and all the other not so fun symptoms that tend to pop up. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. It has zero sugar and is gluten-free, dairy-free, non-GMO, and third-party tested. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use code HEARTBREAK at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code HEARTBREAK for 15% off today. Did you know that 9 out of 10 women lack dominance of L. crispatus, which is why many endure ongoing vaginal discomfort? That's why one of my absolute favorite supplement companies, Seed, created VS01 Vaginal Symbiotic to restore a healthy vaginal microbiome and sustain regulated pH levels. After using VS01 for just a couple months, I've noticed a difference. Other products out there often target only symptoms in ways that further disturb the microbiome, which is so important, just like your gut microbiome. VS01 marks a new era in vaginal care with a sustainable approach to address the root cause of imbalances.
This is an ongoing system that maximizes efficacy with minimal impact on your day-to-day life. Shift from harsh reactive treatments to proactive sustainable care with VS01 from Seed. Go to seed.com/heartbreak and use code 25heartbreak to get 25% off. That's 25% off VS01 at seed.com/heartbreak, code 25heartbreak.
You know, after going through a breakup, your photos need to be replaced and memory lane can feel like a scary place to walk down. But don't forget that you still have so many people in your life who love you and so many memories that don't involve your ex. And Artifact Uprising is here to help you preserve your meaningful moments this holiday season. I have been an Artifact Uprising customer for years now, and I love that they have such high quality prints and beautiful books that are great for putting up in my home or giving as gifts. Just recently, I made a photo book with photos of my three boys from this year. But what I also made, which I highly recommend all of you do, is I made a book with photos of just my best girlfriends, which I now have on my coffee table. It's such a great way for me to see all of my favorite memories with the women in my life who are my rocks. So whether you want to put up some new photos with friends and family around your house, or you want to put together a book as a thank you for the people who are holding you up during this tough time, Artifact Uprising is the place to do it. Artifact Uprising makes it easy to tell your story. Through the end of the year, Heal Your Heartbreak listeners can give Artifact Uprising a try and get 20% off for new customers or 15% off if you have purchased before. Just visit artifactuprising.com and use code HEARTBREAK through December 31st.
Best way I've ever heard that described of, I mean, I feel like at the basic level, it's your, like the inner part of your brain is saying, make contact with your ex, connect with your ex. And then your thinking brain is giving you all these other reasons, but that's the message. And that makes so much sense. All they're trying to do. And I remember I interviewed Dr. Mm-hmm. Amen and he said, your brain is literally looking for your ex. They're looking for that person. So that makes so much sense. And I know for me, what I was told in the beginning of my sobriety is like, if you're having one of those days where it's, you're thinking of a good reason to go get a drink or whatever that looks mm-hmm. like, the best thing you can do is make it home, put your head on your pillow, go to bed. Like sometimes that's all we can do to fight those urges, or, you know, literally sit on your hands. Mm-hmm. Just the best thing to do in those times is, mm-hmm. is nothing. But I know in terms of breakups, I've just heard so many people where it's, they do feel like I have lost the only person that's going to love me. I have lost my soulmate. I have lost this. Like if I let this go, I'm done with love. You know, it's, mm-hmm. it gets to be so, so scary. Yeah. And like the thoughts can be so self-deprecating, mm-hmm. I think too, where we really turn on ourselves and mm-hmm. thinking that, you know, I'm unlovable only by this person. I mean, especially if we, you know, we haven't even really touched on, but like toxic relationships too, it's, mm-hmm. then it becomes even worse. So I can Absolutely. Definitely empathize with people, the things that your thoughts tell you and why it feels so hard to not connect with an ex.
Yes, for sure.
So because the source is so deep, what has to happen to actually detach?
That's a great question. And I think that there are a couple of things going on. But the first one, it's, I mean, the very, very, very first stage of this healing is that withdrawal phase. And exactly like what you're saying, I mean, the way to get through that is just to understand that this is happening and not engage in any activities that is going to make this worse or perpetuate it. So sit on your hands. But I think that there are also other really important stages of healing that people have to move through. And to your point, I mean, especially for somebody who's like, you know, this was it. This was my one and only relationship. And now, you know, it's over, right? I think that for many people, a very important stage of this healing is doing some very serious work around, can this relationship actually be saved? Because sometimes it can. And I think that people need to really go into that and explore for themselves whether or not that is a possibility, because people do break up and then get back together again and then go on to have really positive new chapters in their relationship. That is a thing. And I don't know, maybe if you're going through that, it is something worth investigating. So that is like when we're doing breakup recovery coaching, my practice, that is something that we actually spend a lot of time on. Because if it is door number one and that relationship can be resurrected, how do you do that in a healthy way where you're going to have a different, more positive outcome this time around? And maybe it's a new, fresh start for the relationship. That can be very positive. But also through that work, we are also almost like bringing that thinking brain back online, because it can go into maybe there were some reasons why this relationship wasn't actually that good for me. So the way that I'm feeling right now is actually not in alignment with reality. Mm-hmm. And so just to begin doing some of that, and this is not like a light switch kind of thing. I mean, this is weeks to easily months of therapy or coaching around this specifically, but it really seeks to change that narrative so that at the end of the stage, people are either actively working on building a healthier relationship and trying again, or they have come to a place where they know that this relationship is over and needed to be over, and that this breakup was actually a really good thing. And then from there, they can begin to move into the other stages of healing. But until you do that work, it's very easy to stay stuck in that purgatory and tortured by exactly the kinds of thoughts that you're describing around, you know, idealizing the ex. This is my one and only chance at love. Like, I don't know, was it? Sometimes yes, sometimes no.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense, actually. And and that's, I've never thought about it in that way, but it seems like if you give yourself permission to look at what would it look like to get back together, because I do think a lot of people get stuck in the fantasy of what it could look like getting back together. But then when you actually play the tape through or see what it looks like, you realize that's very unlikely to happen. So that does make sense to give yourself that permission to look at what would it look like to get back together, and then realize, oh, well, it's missing a lot of things that I need, or it was truly making me not very happy. So I think that approach makes a lot of sense. And once you get to that place, which I don't know if the right term, to me, it sounds like kind of acceptance of the breakup. What are some of the next stages that you
through? There are so many different things. And I mean, we could go into more of them, but I mean, there are really a series of mental, emotional, psychological, and kind of growth-oriented experiences that people need to have. And I think, again, where people get stuck is that they don't realize what stage they're in, and also don't realize that until you do the work of the previous stage, you truly can't move forward. Like, for example, it's only after you have been like, yeah, this relationship is actually over, it's only then that you can even transition into grieving the loss. Like, I think that people who are in that first phase of withdrawal that kind of conceptualize that as grieving, it is not. Grieving is like a totally different thing. So grieving the loss, like moving towards closure in that regard, is another important stage. But then beyond that, it's only after that is done that people can even begin to go into some of the dark emotions that they've been experiencing and start to do some of that deeper emotional work that is such an important piece of this. I mean, anger, regret, guilt, jealousy, rage for many people, shame, you know, that self-esteem work that you were talking about is what happens in this phase. But it's only until people do that that they can even start thinking about what just happened. Like, what did I learn? You can't do deeper growth work while you're actively in a lot of pain that needs to be managed and processed and worked through. So like, it's a whole thing, but that's why this is such a specialized type of therapy, of coaching, and that most therapists do not know how to do this, because there was, you know, again, it's the diagnosis and treatment of mental health conditions. It is depression, anxiety, trauma. We know what to do with that, but this is a completely different animal. And so that's why, you know, again, I had to go into all of this research in order to create resources for people to be able to do this work productively in a way that actually moves them forward so that they don't get stuck. And I'm just thinking, one resource that I did put together, because I'm just so passionate about people like needing to have visibility into where they are with this, is a resource. It's on my website. I have to remember what the URL is, but it is like, what stage of breakup recovery are you currently in?
Oh, and so,
yeah, I don't want to be all awkward to try to hunt down the URL.
No, it's okay. I'll make sure I link it in the show notes when this episode comes out.
Good deal. Just growingself.com. And there's a big tab at the top, just free resources, because I have a ton of free resources on my site. I want to help people. Go to free resources and you can find this breakup recovery quiz that will ask a bunch of questions to give visibility into like just what stage of that process people are in. And then, you know, what is the thing that needs to be done that hasn't been done yet that would help them move forward into the next phase of recovery? Because, I mean, I'm sure you've seen this too, Kendra. People can get stuck in this for years.
Yeah.
Like years.
Yeah.
It's awful.
I know. Mm-hmm. It is. And just feel like so many of the things that you said are just putting it, putting such a great structure and words around things that I've just seen anecdotally through messages and talking to people. And let me ask you this. Do you feel like a lot of people get, maybe not consciously, but do you feel like sometimes people are stuck in the kind of acceptance phase because they don't want to move into the scary grief or the scary big emotions
Absolutely.
That come with it?
Absolutely. Yeah. It is very, very protective to be holding on to hopes or like, well, maybe, because as soon as you really let go of that, it is going to bring up a lot of pain and grief. I think you hit the nail right on the head.
Yeah. And I also hear from a lot of people, too, who will say, you know, the first month after the breakup wasn't that bad, wasn't that hard. Mm-hmm. And maybe, you know, their withdrawal part piece wasn't as hard. But a month goes by and all of a sudden I am just on the like sidelined on the floor trying to work through it. So that definitely makes sense in terms of the different stages that people can go through. And it's also true, like, you know, I do think we like to put meaning on breakups. And I truly believe breakups and heartbreak is such a gift at the end of it, because you do get such motivation, I guess, to work through things. But I think when we introduce that concept too early, it can be very invalidating to people.
Absolutely. 'Cause they
say, like, I don't want to go through this. I'd rather have my old relationship than have to go through all this other stuff.
Of course. And I think that is a very real piece of this, particularly if the breakup or divorce is happening against their will. They did not want the relationship to end. And so in addition to all of the other dark emotions, there's also this sense of victimization. Something was done to them, and they're not wrong about that. They were fine. They were having a perfectly nice life, and then their partner decided they didn't want to do this anymore. But then, of course, you know, what does that mean about me? And it opens up so much stuff that feels really unfair, because prior to that, they were chugging along. You know, many people were blindsided by breakups, and it is very traumatizing. It is a type of betrayal trauma. So there are lots of layers of this. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I mean, I hope people listening to this can see it's not just as simple as you need to, quote unquote, get over this person. It's like you got to go through the whole onion that is the breakup and dig down through it. And you have to be really patient with yourself. And do you find in the people that you work with that there is a lot of shame or invalidation of, I should be over this by now. This feels crazy that I'm still hung up on this person. And I just see that so often where people, I feel like, make the process take longer because they're not recognizing what they're actually going through.
Yeah, I think that's a great insight. And I've seen that as well. And I think that there are two pieces of this. I think that people will often criticize themselves or like, why am I not over this yet? When they really haven't been educated about the process that needs to occur, and they legitimately don't know what to do in order to get unstuck and start moving forward. And very legitimately, they feel frustrated by this. Like, how long am I going to feel this way? When is this going to be over? And I think that they're really appropriate to be asking those questions, because there is actually a path forward a more structured approach. And I think it's also really smart for people, especially if they have been working with like a more traditional talk therapist, right? Like you're like sitting there and feeling badly is not going to move this needle. And so if they're feeling frustrated and like, we've been talking about how upset I am for 6 months and nothing is changing, it's like, I think that there needs to be some informed decision making around, wait a minute, is there actually a more productive process that I could be working through right now? Maybe this therapist who loves me and cares about me and we have a great relationship, but maybe they don't actually know how to help me with this, to like pay attention to that frustration. On the other side of it, I have also seen people who are so eager to be done that they try to rush all the way to the end and jump over all the things. And that's actually just another way of getting stuck. I think you see this when people will just like jump into a new relationship without having done the work of healing from the previous one. And they're just kind of kicking the can down the road in hopes that they'll feel better and it'll all be over. They won't have to do any of that yucky stuff. And so
and that I've seen
it go both ways.
Yeah, and then it usually comes out sideways in some future relationship. Yeah. Or you end up like me. I feel like 2015, I went through like 4 breakups at one time because I kept kicking the can down the road. And then all of a sudden it all rent came due, you know, where I actually had to deal with it.
Yeah.
So my last question for you, and this might be, I don't know, this might be too simplistic of a question, but what's your biggest advice for someone who feels like they cannot stop thinking about their ex, where it feels like it's all they do all day is think about them?
You know, I actually have a different perspective on this. I think that is your brain's way of telling you that there is work to be done. There is unfinished emotional business. Your wise mind, your emotional guidance system is trying to show you that things need to be attended to that have not been attended to productively yet. So I think a lot of people try to avoid this or shut it down. And certainly in the later stages of this process, there does come a point once the work has been done, you know, we've wrung everything out of this, there's nothing else to see here, then it is actually quite helpful to move into some of the skills or strategies that will help you shift out of unhelpful thinking patterns. And like, that is also a thing that we teach. But especially if you're in the beginning stages, it's like, what do you need to be paying attention to?
Interesting. I like that perspective. It's kind of like a check engine light.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Exactly. So if you are constantly obsessing about your ex, I would be thinking, this person is possibly in the withdrawal phase. Or they are still trying to figure out if this relationship could be saved and they're like reunion fantasies, what's going on here? Or maybe they need to do some grieving that they haven't given themselves permission or had support in actually doing the work of grieving. So it could be so many different things. Maybe it's dark emotions that haven't been attended to yet. Maybe all of the above. There's a lot here. And it's so important for people to be understanding this and doing this work, because even if you can white knuckle it through this breakup experience and come to a place where you're like, I'm not obsessing about this person anymore and I don't feel like I'm dying, yay me. If you haven't done the work along the way, it is highly likely that the next relationship you get into is going to replicate the same patterns that you experienced in the last one. And I see a lot of that too, as a couples counselor, as a marriage and family therapist. So it's not just about feeling better. It's also about growing into the kind of person who can have really healthy, happy, satisfying, enduring relationships the next time around.
That makes, I've seen that happen. I mean, I have experienced that where it's, you know, same person, different name kind of a thing of falling into the same thing if you don't take a look at what's going on. So I mean, I relate to that on a very personal level. So
we'll save that for our therapy session, Kendra. Yes. No, but it's not, that's what happens to everybody.
Well, This has been so insightful. As someone who's been talking about heartbreak for a very long time, I learned so much from you. So I really appreciate that. Can you share how people can find you, connect with you, potentially work with you? And I'll link everything you mentioned in the show notes.
Yeah. So I'm Dr. Lisa Marie Bobby. I'm the founder of Growing Self Counseling and Coaching. So growingself.com is the URL of my practice. And again, so many free resources. So we have blogs, podcasts, videos, the assessment tool that I mentioned are all available for free online for people to take advantage of them. Because last thing that I do want to share, another piece of this that I didn't mention before came out of, I, like so many people, went through my own traumatic breakup. And I felt so lost and so alone during that period of my life. And I didn't have a wise guide to be able to say, this is the way, when I really needed it. And so I think that that's also turned into a bit of a mission for me to kind of, you know, lift the lamp in the darkness for other people so that there's something that they can move towards and in a productive way. So that's why I put so much out there. And I hope that people take advantage of it.
I love that. I love that. Well, it's been so fun talking to you and so educational and insightful. So really appreciate that and hope everyone is able to connect with you.
Thank you so much, Kendra. It's been a delight speaking with you.
I hope you enjoyed today's show. If you loved it, I hope you'll leave a review and share with your friends. If you're not already following me on Instagram, head to @yourbreakupbestie, where I'm sharing new content almost every day. To join our Facebook group, Healing Hearts Club, where you can connect with thousands of people from all over the world going through breakups, head to the link in the show notes. And don't forget to check out my online courses for more in-depth help through your healing journey. I always end these episodes the same way, reminding you to be nice to yourself, stay connected with loved ones, and the biggest reminder is that this too shall pass. I promise.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.